Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor. That's right, I moved on to the dark side. And I am passionate about seeing students embrace a maker mindset and watching teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I don't pretend to have all the answers. I don't offer a magical elixir. This is just where I ask the questions and I share my journey and my mistakes and my insights and my ideas and my resources and whatever else on this intersection between student learning and creativity. And you can find this podcast at creativeclassroompodcast.com. I just saw something funny walk by. And if you would leave a review on iTunes, I guess they're now calling it Apple Podcasts, but you get the idea. It's iTunes. And real quick, before we get into this topic, this contentious topic of fidget spinners, I want to tell you that there's a new book that AJ Giuliani and I are going to be releasing in the next couple weeks. It's called Empower. It's about student ownership, which is a topic I've been getting into a little bit lately in this podcast. And I want to tell you, it's something that makes me nervous because I'm taking a big creative risk on this. The book looks nothing like any other book I've done. It's highly visual. It's got lots of diagrams and pictures and drawings and sketches. And it's just different. I don't think there are other education books out there like that. And sometimes different is innovative, and sometimes different is just different, just odd, just, well, sometimes it's bad. And so I have no idea if this book is in that category of good different or bad different, but I can tell you this much, I am excited about it. And if you would like to check out the first couple chapters actually of the book, sign up on my blog and I will send you the PDF version of the first couple chapters within the next week or so, and you can find out more about it, see if you like it. So with that in mind, we're going to be talking fidget spinners, right? So there's this big debate about fidget spinners, and I've seen it on Facebook, I've seen it on Twitter, I've listened to the debate rage in my own neighborhood, and with my teacher friends and everyone else. People have very strong opinions about fidget spinners. Okay, they're sort of like the kale of toys. People love it or they hate it, right? But I don't have a strong opinion at all. See, I don't know what I believe about fidget spinners. I know. Everyone is supposed to choose this site on a debate, but I don't have a strong opinion either way. And with that in mind, I asked my son, he's in the sixth grade, what he thought about fidget spinners in school. How do your teachers handle fidget spinners? I asked him. They all handle it differently, he said with shrugged shoulders. Clearly, the fidget spinner controversy wasn't that big of a deal to him. What do you mean they handle it differently? I asked. Well, one of my teachers will take it away if he sees it at all. Most of them say they don't want to hear them or see them, but, we don't have to have them, put away in our backpacks the entire time. Just don't let them be a distraction. But then our math teacher straight up lets us play with them. That's just his process. Really? He doesn't care? I asked. No, he says it's normal to tap pencils or to fidget with things or to shake your legs or whatever when you're solving a hard math problem. He said most people get kind of nervous in math, and that's okay. So if we need fidget spinners, or if we just want to use them, then it's okay. What are your thoughts on it? I asked him. I think they should be allowed, but I'm not that easily distracted by other people's noise, he admitted. What about you? Would you have allowed them? He asked me. I'm guessing yes. I mean, I allowed cell phones and headphones when I was a teacher, and kids used to have those tiny skateboards, and I was never too uptight about that. But bottle flipping, I'd have shut that sucker down. Because it's distracting? Because it's annoying, I told him. And he laughed, because he still remembered the day I pulled him aside at our house and told him that bottle flipping was officially an outdoor sport. Now, I'll take fidget spinning any day over bottle flipping. Bottle flipping drives me crazy. At the same time, I believe there's value in staying focused and hitting a state of flow. I'm a fan of getting into deep work. It's why I voluntarily turn off the Wi-Fi on my computer when I write a draft, or when I prefer listening to music that doesn't have lyrics when I'm grading. You get the idea. I'm not so sure that I want to be distracted. And for that reason, stuff like fidget spinners might be something that I personally would not use in trying to be productive. But it has me wondering if we're asking the wrong question. It's no secret that schools are banning fidget spinners because they're a distraction. It's the same reason they ban headphones, cell phones, food, drinks, you get the idea. And on some level, I get it. We want students to stay focused at school. We tend to view distractions through the larger question of, are students engaged? But I'm wondering, what if that's not the entire picture? What if we asked another question? Do the students own their learning? Suddenly, cell phones and earbuds and fidget spinners and whatever else become a chance to self-regulate and to create personal boundaries. Instead of focusing on confiscating items, you get the chance to explore acceptable use. Now, it might take time in the beginning, but consider the amount of time teachers spend focusing on whether or not someone has chewing gum, or if they're secretly hiding earbuds in their hoodie sleeves, or if their hoodie is the wrong color, or if their shirt is too short or too long, or their pants are too baggy or too tight, or you get the idea. There's a lot of time wasted on that at school. But I also wonder if it illustrates something bigger about this question of student engagement. If we want to deal with distractions and boredom, maybe instead of just focusing on engagement, we need to also focus on student ownership. And that's not to say that engagement doesn't matter, just that when students are fully engaged, they're also owning the learning. And when students are fully owning the learning, the engagement skyrockets. The thought here is that student ownership is at least a part of the answer. For the longest time, I believed in compliance. If I could just make students follow the rules, things would run smoothly. I still believe that compliance is necessary at times. Like if there's a fire drill, I want my students to comply. But eventually, I realized that I could prevent misbehavior if I made lessons more engaging. So in this moment, I shifted from compliance to engagement. Students would be less likely to seek out distractions if they weren't bored. That was my rationale. And on some level, this really worked, but it was still all about me. I had to make the lessons engaging. I crafted entertaining lessons that pulled students away from the boredom and into engagement. It was about me. However, as a dad of young children, I noticed an interesting trend. My kids were small, loud, immature. Of course they were. They were little kids, like not even in school yet kind of kids. But they owned the learning at home. And if a three-year-old could chase his own questions in the backyard and find his own answers, couldn't the same be true of an eighth grader? I started approaching each class with the following question. Do I want to engage my students for the next hour or empower them for a lifetime? And yes, I think engagement is important. I'm not saying we need to have boring lessons. But I realize there's value in shifting beyond just engagement and into this zone of empowerment. My friend George Koros describes it as a spectrum of student agency or ownership. As students take on more ownership, they move from compliance to engagement to empowerment. And so the compliant student becomes the engaged student, becomes the empowered student. Now, I would argue that long-term, if we want to see them become self-directed, lifelong learners, if we want to see them embrace a maker mindset and own the creative process, we want them to hit that place of empowerment. But student ownership is admittedly risky. This shift towards student ownership felt terrifying. What if I empowered students and then they couldn't handle the power? What if I came across as weak? What if the class got too chaotic? What if they got too noisy? I was scared that autonomy would lead to anarchy, that they would abuse the freedom I was giving them. So yeah, I was really, really scared. But here's the crazy thing. Empowered environments tend to have fewer disruptions. If you had walked into my classroom when I emphasized student ownership, you would have found students who were more focused than they had been when I emphasized compliance or even engagement. They would have been pretty quiet, pretty focused, moments of laughter, yes, and cheering and celebrating when they accomplished something, but generally, pretty well behaved. And I have a few theories on why this happens, why ownership leads to better behavior. Students act more responsibly when teachers trust them with responsibility. That's a simple idea, but it makes sense. If you give them some responsibility, a lot of times they'll respond by being responsible. Also, you're more likely to take care of something that you own, whether that's a house, a car, you get the idea. And I think the same thing is true of learning. You're going to take better care of your education if it's something you own. Also, when students have full buy-in, they're able to own their actions and therefore think more ethically. It becomes a much more internal mindset about the decisions that they're making. And there's actually a lot of metacognition that's involved. When students own the process, they aren't having to fight against the system. In other words, the system fits the students rather than the students trying to fit into the system. And so there's less anxiety about being behind or less boredom, you know, because they're ahead of the rest of the class. There's this sense that what they're doing fits with their ability, what they're doing fits with their interests. And that sense of it fitting makes the behavior better. And then also, I just think they're able to navigate emotions because of this sense of awareness and metacognition that's built into it. They're less inclined to be rebelling because they don't have as many reasons to rebel. Now, a little nuance here. Even in empowered environments, even when I shifted towards student ownerships, I still had moments of disruptions. Certain students remained off task and outright refused to work. I had cringeworthy moments when I yelled at a class. I was sometimes impatient and even angry. Certain movements or sounds can make an environment feel chaotic, and then I get edgy. So maybe, yeah, I might have gotten frustrated with that kid spinning a louder fidget spinner while I was talking. That would have been me as a teacher, I guarantee it. But that's not an issue of student ownership. That's an issue of me, this imperfect teacher making tons of mistakes, leading an imperfect community of students in the imperfect world that we inhabit. The fact that it doesn't work perfectly doesn't mean it's not worth engaging in. In other words, it's not that magical elixir that's going to solve everything. But it is ultimately the solution. It is the thing that does work. Because long term, it's the only thing that works when students own the learning. Now, what about that one difficult class? You know exactly what I'm talking about. That one that kind of has the tendency to drive you crazy. You love them, you care about them, yeah, but they're still difficult. Can they still own the learning? Well, again, I had one class that was tough. We scrapped out the Geek Out projects and the Genius Hour after they talked over me during directions. And they used their independent time to just talk and play with those, you know, folded up paper footballs. I cut out our design thinking project. I completely moved away from things when the volume got to a deafening decibel. I switched to these highly structured assignments. I became that teacher that wanted to just ban all fidget spinners. I was in the micromanager mode. We did short assignments with a couple options, maybe a choice menu here and there, but it was very old school. And it backfired. I spent the next 2 weeks fighting these ridiculous battles and getting into really stupid power struggles. So then on the third week, I took a risk. We tried out a student blogging project. They got to choose the themes and the topics and the media formats, and they were on task. They weren't perfect. I don't want to pretend that they were. A few of them were playing games on their devices instead of learning, but there was a difference. There was a buy-in. It was the first project when they had had any true sense of ownership, and eventually students self-selected their own strategies. They chose their own interventions and engaged in self-assessment. And by the end of the semester, they were pretty well behaved as a group. And by the end of the year, they had become empowered as a community. Again, not perfect, but pretty amazing nonetheless. And it's not because of me. Again, I was the broken person in a broken world. It's because student ownership works. It's because student ownership is the solution, not the problem. I no longer believe that choice is a privilege. I believe it's a fundamental right. I think it's what every single student needs. Sometimes they will need more structure. Yes, absolutely. But they all deserve to own their learning. And more importantly, I believe it's something that works. It can feel risky to empower your students even when they misbehave. But I'm telling you, it's worth the risk. I've learned that so many students, labeled for years as being the, quote, bad kids, will do amazing things when they are empowered to own their learning. But you just have to take that risk as a teacher. And so for all of you who do that, for anyone listening to the podcast and go, but I'm already doing this, please hear this particular episode, not as a call to be drastically and wildly different, but as a thank you note, as a quick way of saying thank you for empowering your learners. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom podcast. If you enjoy it, please leave a review on iTunes. Or I guess it's now called like Apple Podcasts or something. Anyway, if you leave a review, that would mean the world to me. Have a wonderful day and keep making something awesome.